Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
انتو بعضكم بالاوهام وانا ببني بالاحلام كل شي عندكم لبعدين شوفوا انا وين انتو بعضكم بالاوهام وانا ببني بالاحلام كل شي عندكم لبعدين شوفوا انا وين.
Binette Rose Seck has her roots in Senegal. She is telling her story as a black girl in Sweden. She did have strong female role models at home, and she eventually found her career path. Today she is working at EVA with different projects mainly focused on getting foreign-born people out to jobs.
So 1, 2, 3 and don't be shy, come shout out my name,
shout out my name.
Hi and welcome to the podcast Resan Hit, Binette Rose Seck.
Thank you for having me.
How are you?
I feel really good today.
I'm a bit nervous, actually. I think you were nervous when we were recording in Swedish, and this is the first time we recorded in English, so I'm a little bit nervous.
That makes me feel so comfortable.
Oh, okay. cool. Yeah. So, how's your day been? It's quite hot here in Stockholm, actually.
I mean, it's lovely when it's this summer time in Stockholm. In so many ways, because you don't have to peel off all the onions coming in and out of the office. And I just feel that people are very well dressed. They always have, you know, the nicest clothes and summer dresses or the coolest shoes. I saw this reggae guy, right? I shouldn't call him a reggae guy, but he had dreadlocks, really cool suntan. He looked super Swedish. So yeah, there are things.
So he was like blonde?
He was super blonde, blue-eyed, you know, tatted and everything. But he looked like a guy that you had dipped in caramel or something. He had the coolest dress code. So
next time you have to take a picture.
Yeah. And when it's winter, this is crazy that, you know, I don't even notice what people wear in winter time because it's too cold.
Man, and everybody's wearing a coat and it's quite dark colors and everybody's just running in and out buildings. Nobody's like really looking at each other.
Exactly. I mean, you're so self-absorbed. It's like, where are my hands right now? Can I feel my nose? my God, my eyelashes. I think they've stuck together or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When it's summertime, it's like, oh, who are you? Where have you been? Oh, I love your dress.
Yeah, everybody cool looks shoes. So relaxed and like a little bit cheeky and flirty. And mm-hmm. It's in there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that only in my head?
No. It just, I love the fact that you, the way you said it felt like it's okay to do it now.
No, I didn't say that. I'm the married one here.
Sorry.
And I can't even say cut because it's my husband who's cutting it.
Okay, okay. Now we're just off-tracking, Bennett. Let us start as we usually do in this podcast, yeah. Which the name is translated is Your Journey Here, actually.
Yeah.
It's a Swedish name, and you will tell us about your life and your journey until here we are standing today, and perhaps we will also hear some of teasers from the future.
Okay.
So, Bennett, tell us, when and where were you born?
I'm born in Stockholm, Huddinge sjukhus, in the 80s. No, I'm 1981.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm getting accustomed to it. I don't know, previously when people said, okay, how old are you? I would be like, oh, I wouldn't say the age, and I would rather say I'm born 1981 because it sounded so super young.
Yeah, because in the 80s could be 89 also.
And then people would say, okay, 80s, oh, early or late or... So anyway, I was born in 1981 in Stockholm, but we left when I was a couple of months years old, and we went back to Senegal because I was very ill. I was born with problems with my lung or something. One of the lung size was super, super decreased. Mm-hmm. So you would say that one of the lung size were a size of an orange and the other one was like a grape. Yeah, or, you know, or another fruit, like, I don't know, strawberry.
Different sizes, not good.
Different size, not good, very ill. So we went back to Senegal.
So why would it be better for you to be there than in Sweden? Is it better medical care or?
They didn't think I would survive, so they didn't want to bury me here. It was that serious. And they kind of wanted the family to get to say their goodbyes or something. And then what happened was my grandmother, she just took me on and took care of me. She kept giving me really good, wholesome food because they, you know, obviously they don't have any pesticides or stuff like that. They don't have, I don't think they have the money for it, even back in those days. So just really organic, natural food, that's how I survived. And I've been giving it a lot of thought because, you know, what would have happened if we never went back to Senegal? You know, what would have happened to me as a person if I had never had to grow up in a family with uncles and grannies and, you know, because mom and dad are from two different, you would say, levels of the society. My father is more like a bourgeois.
Oh, what is that?
Sounds very wealthier part of a society. And then mom is from, you would probably say that it's, I don't know how to call it, a lesser level of a society. And the thing is, mentioning this, it just gives me an idea of what people think of India. That there are different levels of the society, and depending on where you are, you would have a higher level of life, or you know, you would definitely tend to have a different type of quality of life, right? But whereas in Senegal, we don't have that. We don't have the different levels of society in that sense. We would rather have, you know, the poor side or the rich side. That's it, and then in between, you have tribes. And depending on which tribe you belong, it definitely sets a path.
Is it because you can actually get married in between the tribes or levels?
Mm-hmm.
And you can like move from one level to another? But in India, that's not that easy, I guess,
mm-hmm.
without knowing too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it maybe you're not locked in your level?
I would probably say that it has... It's very strongly tied to politics in India. But whereas in Senegal, it's more tied to history and traditions.
Mm.
This is what you should do, you know, the norms of things. You should marry this type of tribe, or you should have this sort of an education, or you should this or you should that. It has nothing to do with politics at all.
Sorry, was it a big thing when your parents from different levels married each other?
I think it was a big thing. Yeah. But they never made it to seem as though it was. It just felt very natural to be part of a huge family, right? My mom is the oldest of 12 siblings.
Wow.
And she was the first one to have a degree, a university degree. And I haven't given her that much props for that because, you know, the journey she's taken on is, can you imagine, you know, the old pictures you have of Africa is this woman, a dark-skinned woman, almost blue-skinned, right? And she's carrying something on the head. It could be food, it could be fruits, it could be anything. And then she usually has a child on the back or something. That's the most traditional picture you have of a West African woman. My mom was one of those that carried water on her head during her school years. And then not even have it, she didn't even have enough electricity, and she didn't have the means even to go to school. She had aunts and cousins that would contribute to her growth. And she went from that state, you know, all the way through a university degree, and she was the one that was prominent banker back then by the age of 23. So I think...
Wow.
There's something in her story that is just amazing, not to mention that her mother, my grandmother, is analphabetic.
Wow. That's a big journey.
Mm-hmm.
So how come your dad and your mom went to Sweden at the first place? And when was that?
My dad had actually experienced Sweden 10 years before I was born. Or even more than that, you know, a couple of years before, in the 70s, he came to Sweden from Paris as an engineer. He followed technology. He was very interested in, you know, what the next step in tech was, how well developed mechanical engineering was back then, automation, robotics, that kind of engineering. And so I grew up with a father that was very, very prominent when it came to technology. And that's the reason why he chose Sweden. I do make jokes of it a lot in his absence. I do say, you know, to people that he probably heard the wrong city and called, you know, country. He probably heard Suisse and not Suède. As you would say in French. And so the joke is someone in his class said, okay, who wants to go to Sweden? And he's like, Swiss, yay! I want to go to Swiss.
Pick me!
I speak the language.
Oh.
And he ends up in Umeå, Stockholm. And people are like, hey, Umeå, do it.
Because he was speaking French.
He was speaking French. He spent 15 years in Paris. He left Senegal as a 15-year-old. So my father, when I was 14, he said, you're ready now. I mean, I left Senegal when I was 15. You're 14 and I trust you. So you need to go to the States. So I went to Miami and I spent 4 months alone. And people were like, you know, she's probably in Spain. My classmates didn't really believe that I was in Miami, but it changed the trajectory of my life.
Is that when you lived in Harlem?
No, that was Miami. But
sorry,
Harlem
Miami,
was
you said.
Miami. Or I mean, Harlem was 4 years after that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so 4 years prior to Harlem and New York and Central Park and that phase of life, it was actually Miami that introduced me to U.S. And I think I wasn't in love with the States when I first went there. I was actually in love with Japan. So I would sit in the libraries and study Japanese and the Japanese culture. I was very, very fascinated about that.
Wow.
And the technology of Japan. I really was just amazed.
Have you now been there?
No, the sick thing is, it never became Japan. I went to China, and I lived in China instead. So I came back from China a little over 4 years ago. because my uncle, he lived in China for 19 years.
Where in China were you?
Shanghai.
Shanghai.
And so imagine Shanghai 19 years ago. I mean, it was, not the China we know of today at all. So he saw the growth of, that society going from zero, basically, to this high-tech, highly evolved society. So I wanted to go there, and I wanted to experience that. And people said, there aren't any Africans in China, which was total bull.
Yeah, it is.
My God, it was like New York all over again. I was like, what? What's going on? People from all over Africa were in China, were in Beijing, were in Hangzhou, in Tsinghua, and all these amazing cities, right? So I loved every second of that.
But we have to back up, actually, a little bit. You were living in Senegal for 7 years, if I remember it right.
My first 7 years was based in Dakar. So, and this is quite interesting because when I was two, the earliest memory that my father has of me is, me going to school because I started talking early. I'm a talker. So I started talking early. And back in the 80s, they didn't have the different levels that we have, like doggies, and then you go from doggies to förskola and that kind of thing, from kindergarten and on. But they had school. So as soon as you start talking and you have the privilege to go to school, that's what you do. So I learned how to read and write when I was way too young. So I would come back home and teach my brother everything that I had learned from school. So that is his earliest memory of me. So he kept saying throughout my, youth that, he thought I was going to be a teacher. Or he did think of me being or having a connection to academia in one way or another.
Cool. And we have to mention that you were the only child leaving Sweden you're the first child.
Mm-hmm.
So when you went back to Senegal, you didn't have any siblings. But then you got siblings in Senegal, yeah? Your brother.
My brother is born in Dakar. He's the best brother in the world.
Is he listening?
Probably not. But he's like, he's the kind
so
of
he
guy.
So he is the best brother.
Yeah, man. he is actually the kind of guy that I talk about in his absence as well as the greatest, one of the greatest teachers I've ever had. Apart from my grandmother and mother, father and all of that, my brother has taught me tons. And if you ask him, there's only 1.5 years in between us, but it's, technically it's two, so it depends on who you ask.
Very important, yes.
And then I have a sister, she was born in Sweden, and she came like 7 years later, so there's a 7-year gap between us.
So tell us, how come they went back, or your parents moved back to Sweden after 7 years in Senegal?
There was a conversation between them in how do we... where do we settle down for the kids' sake and for their future? Because, Senegal has never really been a country in Africa that have had wars or anything like that. So it's a safe country to live in, even these days. It always has been, even, during the time my mom and dad were growing up. But something was... happening in Europe back then. My father didn't really want to move back to Paris because the Sweden we know of segregation, integration, those kinds of issues we have in Sweden today, that already existed back in the 70s in Paris. So my father saw that as a negative trend for his children. So he was like, there's this country, you have to see it, just see it. So mom came with him and they just got stuck. They got stuck.
I mean, it summertime?
No, wintertime. And, all of my growing up, I've heard that this is the last year, Binette. you know, just don't feel too comfortable. We're going back next year. This is the last year, Binette, that kind of thing. So I never really got to separate myself completely from Senegal. Because at home we were speaking Wolof. We were listening to Youssoundour. We were listening to, do you know? We should listen to him. There were so many, you know, the walls at home and everything that I knew was home was connected to Senegal in one way or another. It was very much of an African home that I grew up in.
And was that in Stockholm?
Yeah. In Järva, Tensta. Tensta, Spånga, Tensta.
That's north of Stockholm. It's a suburb area north of Stockholm.
Exactly. And we lived just in front of Spånga IP, where Järvaveckan had their event just the other day. So that's how I grew up. And it was quite interesting because at home, we were Senegalese. It was very much African home. You know, mom and dad were the rulers or something.
So the food, the music.
Everything. The food, the music. Every conversation we had, even at home, was about technology or Africa.
How did it look? I have a lot of memories and I've been talking to my guests a lot of time about, you know, the moments when you bring home friends. And depending where you live and where your friends are from, there were some moments that you were like realizing, or me, I did anyways, that, okay, in my family, it's different. You know, mom is cooking when I'm coming home. She's always cooking for like 15 people, even if we don't even expecting guests. So when I grew up, first I thought it was a little bit maybe embarrassing because it was different. Mm-hmm. But when I grew up just to like high school, then the guys were like, oh, we want to come home to you because it's always good food. You know, we want to meet your mom. So it was like from going from a bit embarrassing to quite being maybe not proud, but that's where everybody want to hang out because there was the food and my parents were like, or my mom was home at least. And there were some other kind of kindness in I won't say kindness, that's wrong, but I have...
Generosity, I have, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. And I have like Swedish, ethnical Swedish friends who at a grown-up age are speaking about or telling the stories about when you're going to a friend's home when you were little, you had to sit in the bedroom, their bedroom, and wait until the family you were at had their dinner. And then they were like, I'm coming when I'm ready, when I've had my dinner. And the parents didn't invite them in. Yeah. And I don't think I've myself been in that situation. I don't think so. But absolutely not when coming to our home. That would not even happen. I mean, my parents would be a little bit like annoyed if we would sit in my room and close the door, you know. So do you have those memories from your home that you bring home friends that you felt like, okay, we are listening to different music than what they're doing? Or did you have that?
Oh, yeah. But I do share that experience that you just said, that, you know, some of the friends' families had a different culture when it came to food. You just don't share it with other people. And you would sit in the bedroom waiting for them to have their dinner.
Did you have that?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, the beauty of being, growing up in Tensta, Spånga, back then, I mean, I had neighbors from Turkey, Eritrea. I mean, the family that I basically grew up with were Eritrean. So I knew the Eritrean anthem. Eritrea. No, I'm not going to sing. Oh, my God. I always do.
Didn't even go there.
Every time I tell the story, I just hear the song in my head. I knew their anthem before the Swedish anthem. Can you imagine?
Oh, yeah.
So we had Turkish. I had Turkish friends. I had Eritrean friends. I had Greek friends. I had friends from Chile. Hola, my Chile friends. Is that even Spanish? I don't know. And then...
Hola, my Swedish. Yeah, kind of.
And I don't know. I had multi-layers of cultural experience. And the reason why I'm saying multi-layers rather than saying multicultural is because the layers were age, you know. There was gender. There was a life experience. Some of the friends that I had, they came to Sweden because of wars in their, you know, homeland or whatever. And some others, they were born in Sweden, but they didn't grow up with a father or a mother or both or whatever. So there was multi-layers of experiences. And that made me focus less on the differences we had. I had some friends where I would sit in their room waiting until they had eaten. Other friends were like Lena Ay Adaison from Syria. Her mom would cook food for 25 people and there were only like 5 people in their house. And they would force me to eat. I mean, it was ridiculous. Sorry. I mean, you would eat until you die. And then she comes out with tea and you're like, I want to go home.
And save me.
Yeah. And, you know, Helen from Eritrea, her mom was the best. She would always want me to experience injera and everything they had. And we would eat with our hands together with everyone. So the multi-layered experience made me focus less on the differences we had. And that kind of saved me because in school, everything was completely different. Because our teachers wanted to, they really wanted us to understand that we were different. I had this teacher as early as when I was 9, and he said, Binet, you know, on the performance review that you would have with your mom and dad once a month or once every quarter or something, you would go with your mom and dad to school and then you would have a performance review. Utvecklingssamtal.
Yeah, you still got that. Cool.
And I was 9, I think. 9 and 11. Those are the ages that I remember the most. Because I had this teacher that kept saying, you know, Binet, she's a sweet girl. She takes care of everybody. She's like a second teacher. She helps out. She mobilizes and organizes the kids. I'm a kid, okay? And he would say, but I can't give her the best grades because she's a girl from the suburbs and she's a black girl. You know, she's not Swedish. So
but which
obviously,
school was that? That was not the school in the suburb.
Yes, it was.
It was. Mm-hmm. So even the teachers, oh, that's amazing, though.
And that was the sadness, you know, because in our class back then, we had maybe 50% were Swedish and the other 50 was multicultural. And outside of school, my life was multicultural. Not only did I have uncles living in China and Japan, I actually have an uncle who, you know, he lived in Japan for 37 years or something. I've had family members from all over the world. That's the reason why I went to New York and Miami. My aunt lived there. And so I had already experienced a multicultural life, very international. When it came to religions, it was multi-layered. When it came to languages, when it came to the experiences and all of that. So I didn't really have a box of this is how you should live your life and this is what you should believe in, because I knew that there was difference in it. It was very diverse already in my life.
But still you didn't get the highest grade because you were not having the right ethnical
background.
Because
I wasn't Swedish. But and that's like, not only not Swedish, but being a girl from the suburbs, not, you know, having parents, immigrant parents or parents with a different culture or and country. So the strange thing is that it was accepted. People were like, yeah, that's true. So you should fight 3 times as hard as a Swede. You know, that was an anthem that we had growing up. So, and that literally, it could have destroyed me if I didn't have the other balance. Because why I'm mentioning it could have destroyed me is because you become this uber ambitious girl. And when it becomes accepted, you forget who you are. That no matter where you're from, no matter where you live, no matter how old you are, no matter how you decide to live your life, you're worthy. You know, that's how we should teach our children, especially in the suburbs, that no matter how you look, you know, and where you're from or whatever, you're worthy. You're worthy to dream as high as you want, to dream bigger than you can even imagine, because there's a difference between imagination and dreams.
How do we do that?
Just, I mean, don't mention the differences. Welcome it.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Don't tell me that we're different, because that's a fact. There's no one like you. If you look at your index finger, this is a fact. I mean, there's no one that has the same index finger than you. Or scientifically, there might be, but there's very few of you. So you're already unique in who you are. And the DNA that you're carrying is very unique than anyone else's. But if you keep telling me that you're very different, and the reason why I can't place a thought in your head that you're worthy is because you're not like those guys. Or the reason why you have to be super duper ambitious is because you're a girl. Or the reason why you have to move out of the suburbs as soon as you can is because the people in Östermalm and all the other places have a better life. So if we would just teach the kids that you're worthy already and remind them of that, the difference between us should be your character. And, you know, we know that. The character should definitely be put back in to the way we speak, the way we think, the way we behave towards each other. If this is a cool person or not depends on the character, rather than it depending on who you are, where you were born, where you live, where your parents are from, or the skin tone you have. That shouldn't matter. And I'm not talking about idealistically. I'm talking about surviving. Wanting children to survive and wanting to have a society based on young people that really believe in themselves and want to be part of society and build the society rather than being destroyed.
This is very interesting, because me and you have been discussing this before, and I was talking about that I wish that the information of the choices you have in here in Sweden, to start with, the choices we have, it's amazing. You can study at the university with actually no money, because it doesn't cost anything and so on. I'm not sure that everybody knows these choices. And you told me, well, that is one thing, but it's more complex than that. It's that they have to feel that they are worthy, exactly what you're saying now. And I've been thinking about it, and you're right. It's kind of a two-step, or actually three-step maybe. But being having the information, but also this buffet of choices is also for you. You can pick anything. That's I think we have a bit of work to do there. I'm not sure that we are there yet. What do you think? Do you think that those teachers that you had in the suburb at that time, are they having the same mindset as they had back then? Or do you think, while we are speaking here today, are they saying the same to another black 9-year-old girl who's actually should have the best grades? Like, no, sorry, you're actually not Swedish, you're not the same, blah, blah, blah. Or is that change, you think?
Oh, man, this is a good question. I would love to elaborate on that. Okay. Let me get back to it. Because what I want to mention is that I can give you an example. When a young person, you know, independently of how they look, where they're from, and the gender they have, and where they live, just being young is hard enough.
Yeah, of course.
And then on top of everything, you have good examples of how you could live your life. Because talking is super cheap. I mean, us sitting here talking is wonderful. It's such a privilege, right? But being a teacher as well and talking about what a young person can do and cannot do is one thing. But what actually reaches the soul of a human being or the hearts of young people are good examples. So if you get an example of how well off you will be as a rapper, as an artist, or as a footballer, you get examples of how you can live your life as a singer or a dancer or as whatever. It is the examples that you carry with you. Like, man, people that look like me are doing this. Then that is what I should be doing. That speaks loud. I would say it's even louder than what I would say to my kids. So what we should work on is creating as many good examples as we can so that people would say, hey, people that look like me can become entrepreneurs. They can, you know, save the world. People that look like me can become presidents of the world. People that look like me or have similar backgrounds and similar complexity as I do can you know, choose whatever they feel like. Because growing up, what I had was, and what I constantly heard was, girls like you are really good singers. Girls like you are really good dancers. Can you dance for me? You know, and whenever we had, you know, the end of the year, just before the summer break, I would always get the question, do you want to dance or do you want to sing?
See, I never got that question.
It's true. And that's the crazy thing, because they would assume they would assume that a girl that looks like you are really good at those things. But I would have appreciated, looking back, if they had asked me, would you want to be a speaker at the graduation? Would you want to take the school to the next step and actually build it? Because I was, I took part in building it in the beginning, but help us to grow, help us to define the curriculum, help us to, you know, reach other people from other states to come and study in Spånga Tensta, you know, so that we can have a more cultural, multicultural layered educational system. So good examples do speak loud. And that's why whenever I see a young person, no matter where they live and where they're from, I tend to ask them, you know, what do you think of yourself? Because the opportunities exist, but what do you think of yourself? And how can we change that thought and influence you, inspire you to think beyond whatever you have in your mind? Because when I do meet young people saying, but I think engineering is quite cool and I would love to work in, you know, within the technology field. I hear that there are tons of opportunities, but that's not for people like me. I hear that all the time.
Still.
oh my God, all the time.
And
because the question you asked, I'm sorry, the question was, do you think that teachers still say things like that? I think that teachers need to create and help create better examples. Because even if you have the best teacher saying you can be anything you want, and then you don't have a good example of what you can become, then you have a big gap between the idea and the actual reality. But and then, of course, I know that we have teachers that say, well done, I'm going to give you an A on this, but, you know, you won't get a job anyway. Or, well done, I'm going to give you an A in everything because you're the most ambitious girl, and they would lift you up in the school and you would feel like you have the entire world in front of you. But when it comes to looking for a job, I'm sorry, your last name is, it's not good enough. You know, you were an A student, but sorry, you can't get into this school because we don't have people like you going to that school.
Or at this company. To be fair, me and you are quite the same age, and we didn't have those good examples that you were talking about. Or we had, but it was like quite few. Somebody that we both mentioned was Alice Bakunke, one of my old guests in the
love
pod.
Love her.
Totally. Yeah. Have a crush, a big crush.
Yes.
But she was actually on TV for a kids show, like Disney something. And she was the first, or for me, she was the first black girl or woman on TV that you saw back then in the early 90s, was it? Yeah. And then I think it's a lot of people who mentioning her. It's funny, and I think she can carry it. Alexandra Pascalido.
Oh yeah,
Alexandra was like the only name coming up when we were talking about Rinkeby.
Oh yeah. That's true. That's true.
She was like everybody knew she was from Rinkeby,
yeah.
But she was the only profile, you know. And she's a strong, I love her too. Mm. She's lovely. But what I'm saying is, back then, when it was, we were talking about these suburbs and these areas, the only person they were inviting was her, and nothing more. But today that has changed a little bit, I think, with us as a generation of like second or whatever we are being called, immigrants, second generation of immigrants. It's more names, it's more variety of people and looks. And are you with me on that? Or
yes, I think what you're mentioning is, it's such a wonderful conversation.
It
I have
is,
to
isn't
pinch
it?
Myself. I do. I love the questions you're asking and the perspective that you are inviting me to, because it forces me to reflect. And what I remember from those days, as you mentioned, Alice Ba and Alexandra, I remember that we still didn't have those types of minds, those types of amazing individuals and women in all fields. I mean, it was, you're welcome to media. You're very much welcome as an artist. You're very much welcomed, you know, when it came to TV and all of that. But when it came to actually being part of a steering group committee or a board member or a manager, those were lacking.
Long way to go. We still have a long way to
go. Those were lacking. And actually, the thing is, here is the interesting thing. If you're a child and a grown, I would say a young adult, having big dreams, as I said, you will definitely look beyond TV. You will look for it everywhere. I remember when I went into Oleans, or I would go to IKEA. I would go to all of these different places as a consumer. And I would, like, as a crazy person, look for it. I would look for people that look like me in positions that I would respect or something. Like, who is the cashier? Was it a woman? Or was it a male? Did that person have a different last name? I was very attentive to that.
Aren't you still? Because I am.
I still am. And because to me, I felt like if there was diversity where I am expected to consume, then I am included.
Interesting.
That's how I thought when I, growing up. And I would choose schools sometimes or to attend events, or I would literally attend a situation and I would look for who is the teacher and how much does the teacher know about cultures and different perspectives. And I would literally, I would fall in love, and I still do, I fall in love with people that are tolerant and that are curious. And they would never be out to get you just to know, okay, you're from Senegal, now I know the box I should put you in. But more like, what type of perspective are you coming with? And how can we include your perspective to whatever it is that we're doing, no matter the age you have? So meeting a teacher that would say, oh, I think you have a different perspective here, that would be the teacher I would fall in love with, and the school and the teaching, the curriculum, I would do anything for. And the same goes for consuming a product or a service where I feel included. And I think sometimes we overlook that when it comes to market and how we market certain things. We wanted to look and seem as though we're a big Benetton family, On the posters, you'd see people from Asia and Africa and people from Middle East, and you would be so happy to find someone from Iran, and you would be like, "Salam, khubi, khuba, merci."
No, I just do. Just joking.
But
I don't.
On the inside, there's nobody.
No.
That looks like you. So it just becomes a poster from the outside? That doesn't make any sense.
And I think a lot of companies haven't even come to the poster. It's not even there. I mean, I'm from engineering, quite white male kind of companies.
Mm-hmm.
And starting at a company or sitting in some kind of conference or whatever is like, do I see anybody a little bit darker than white? Any ladies? Any girls? Mm. Nothing, still. And it's 2019.
Mm.
So I think we have a long way to go, actually. But we're working on it, don't we? We all do, I think. To be honest, our generation is... I'm happy to see... I have a sister who's 10 years younger than me, and her friends talking about... Or my guests in the podcast, who's talking about some stuff that I wouldn't even dare to even think those thoughts.
Mm.
For them, it's like... No, I say no thank you to this, because I can see that they don't have any... Like you say, I can see that they don't have any... This kind of... didn't I have any diversity in the teachers? Why would I take even that course? I'm like, wow, I wouldn't even think that at my time. Mm. I wouldn't even dare to think that. I mean, we have come and I hope with our daughters and with our children, we have even come even further. I really hope so. But I'm coming to a question. You want to say something?
I want to give you an example.
Sure.
I love examples, because this is the whole thing. I mean, we can talk about inclusiveness and segregation all we want, but it's the good examples that go straight to the people's hearts. The year after I came back from US as a 14-year-old, we were expected to do internship, PRAU. And the advice I got was, okay, you should get something in Tensta Centrum, or you should...
That's the mall in your area.
Yeah, in a mall, in a store. There are tons of stores that wants you to work there. I mean, you can apply to anything. You can really become anything you want, but there are stores for you. okay, if anything, I was like, anything? Then I want to become a doctor, I think.
During 2 weeks of internship.
You know, and she laughed just the way you did now. She was like...
No, you can't do surgery.
No, Binette, no. I mean, come on, you haven't even read the first introduction course of medicine or anything like that. You're too young. Come on, you know, you're too young. It's such a high risk for you to work at a hospital. But I was like, I'm interested in Karolinska, and I think I'm going to apply. And she says, but that's not for you. That's not for you. So what I did was I called them. I called Karolinska as a 14 or 15-year-old, right?
That's so cool.
And I was speaking to someone that was like, I don't even know how to help you. I've never gotten that question before. But let me connect you with someone at a department. So she connects me with this nurse, a random person again. And the nurse says, I guess internship. I've done that. We have people that do internships. So you would probably need a tutor or a supervisor. And I think there's this doctor that could do it. Let me ask him. And you need to go for a, 10 days medical introductional course. But you'll be the youngest there for sure. And I was like a young grandchild of all the people. But let me confirm with the doctor first, and I will give you a call back. She calls me and she says, you're welcome to attend the medical course. You have to go there for 10 days, and we will only accept you for a month. Is that okay? So I went back to school, and they were like, Karolinska Universitetssjukhuset.
Are you sure? Did you actually go there?
No, this is not for you. I went there.
The
doctor said, in order for me to take you in, you have to be here 5:30 every morning. I was there 4:45 every single morning. And I followed him. My first experience as this meanie doctor was for two 14-year-old girls lying in bed because of anorexia. I was feeding them every single morning.
And you were 14 yourself,
yeah? It humbled me because I was the same age. And in school, all of my friends were talking about, I'm too fat, I'm too I'm too dark, I need to lighten my skin, I need to have the braids, you know, I have to change. I can't be the way I am. I'm not worthy unless I change. There I am feeding people that could be my friends. And they're fighting for their life. I went back to school and it totally changed my life. It changed my life. I get chills thinking about it.
Actually, those weeks are so important. I think there are for some kids, for me anyways, it was the first time I saw a Swedish company, you know, from inside, not only label, how it works, how do they have meetings, how do they... So it's so important, and we kind of come to what you are working with today, those internships. Please tell us.
Well, first I can tell you why I've chosen to work with the things that I have chosen to work with. And it does go back to the time at Karolinska when I was only 14 or 15 years old, and this cleaner lady from Ethiopia, because I was dressed as a nurse, and I had the badge and everything, I was so proud. And I would just walk through the corridors, and she would say, please do more good for you and for the next coming generations. Thinking about it just makes me cry. So today I'm working with internship services internship programs, rather, for youth through Tekniksprånget and for newly arrived academics through Jobbsprånget. So it's 4 months of internship, and you choose where you want to work and what you believe in. because through Tekniksprånget you have a good chance to become an engineer. And through Jobbsprånget, you have a really good chance to get your very, very first job experience within your own competence in Sweden. So for a newly arrived academic, it takes 5 to 10 years to get a job in Sweden. And through Jobbsprånget, we're looking at, just after 4 months or, maximum 10 months.
And you're actually managing this for, it's not a company, but it's... You want to tell us?
Yeah, I work at the Royal Swedish Academy of Engineering Sciences. It's a very long name for EVA. And we run these two internship programs called Tekniksprånget and Jobbsprånget. And it's been the best job experience. It's been a learning path, definitely. But I can link it to the little Binette, the one that had a dream and someone said, you can't do that, that's not for you. And just really practicing what I believe in, not only for myself, but also create that possibility and opportunity for others.
That's lovely. And I have to ask, if one wants to come in contact with you or just follow your amazing journey, how do you do?
You can definitely contact me through LinkedIn. It's Binette Sek. That easy. And then I also have Instagram. I recently got it. So it's Binette_R. R as a rose, because it's part of my name. And you need to follow me, though, because there's this amazing project coming up. And it has to do with programming, entrepreneurship, AI for Africa. So, coming
That's
up.
So cool. I will follow you. Or I'm actually...
I'm already following you.
I'm already following you. Binette, it's been lovely to have you here in the studio and do this in English. I was a bit nervous, but you have such a calm and lovely aura. So I'm okay now. 1 hour of recording, I'm totally okay. But we're coming to my last question, actually. Oh. Who do you think I should invite next to my podcast, Resan Hit?
And it has to... Could it be in English?
Yeah, sure.
I have the person.
But it must be
you.
Somebody who's in the country.
Oh.
Is it somebody who's not living here? Are you giving me somebody across Atlantic? Remember, I'm Iranian. I can't go to US. Now she's laughing.
You're cracking me up. Nima. Neda, I mean.
Neda.
I don't know why I said Nima, but that would be interesting. Nima is also a really wonderful woman. And she's an entrepreneur. But Neda. At Changers Hub. What a woman. By the way, I want to say thank you.
Oh, thank you
for your spirit. Thank you for blessing us. Thank you for this opportunity to share our story and to listen to other people's stories. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to get to know you as well.
Thank you for being there for all those little Binette. Lovely to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you so, so, so much. This has been a blessing.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.